what can you tell us about what you're doing to recruit the right people that you need for those positions?
So every opportunity that they get, whether they're at a convention or they're at a conference or they're at a school, university, wherever that may be, they actually take the time to sit down and talk to the students or talk to the potential applicants. They also go after folks that we call like passive seekers. So people that didn't even think that they maybe wanted to work for the Department of Homeland Security, had no idea maybe what we did. We were starting to spend a lot of time and effort making sure that they understand our mission, what it's all about, and so that we can just be far more active in our recruiting efforts.
So here in the National Protection Programs Directorate, we have the mission in cybersecurity for response and mitigation of cyber threat across federal, civilian government, and the private sector to include small to medium business and academia. And key to that is getting the best minds on board, getting people that are good communicators, good policy thinkers, just generally good scientists, good data miners, whatever part of the spectrum you enjoy most applies to cybersecurity in some way. So not only the hardcore ninja scientists, which we do have and do, of course, need more of those, but also people that can generally look at the world and say where it's going and coordinate with different areas of the country, pockets of innovation in different cities, as well as work with our teams inside. So we're looking at a very broad set of highly talented, highly capable, and most important, highly passionate patriots.
And are you finding that you are able to find these candidates that you just described? I mean, you know, we hear all the time that especially the STEM fields and cybersecurity, that it's a mission critical skills gap in government at large. But are you finding that you have, you know, you're getting the right people in the door?
I think we're doing better. We want to grow that team. We want to work with Ms. Bailey and the folks across the department and across government to really bring in the best talent. And I believe we can bring in an elite talent pool. People will see things working in this department, I know that firsthand, that you'll never get to see in the private sector. It's fascinating. You can take those skills and bring them other places throughout your career, combine those skills and bring them back to government. And when we go out, whether it's giving a keynote or talking at a school, people are really interested because the people that on our teams are excited about what they do. And I think that excitement breeds more excitement. And what Congress has done for us with these authorities has helped us to get past some of the stigma of it takes too long or it doesn't pay quite enough and help get past some of those gaps to really create the world-class team and to grow that.
We're starting to partner between the cybersecurity expertise and then the human resource expertise. And so a great example of this is where we've actually taken folks from our IT community and we have them as a cell sitting actually in the human resource office working together. And so what you learn from that is what the HR specialists learn is what it is to be in this world of cyber. Like, and they learn the lingo, and then they begin to understand like how a position description really needs to be written, which then drives the job announcement, which then drives the recruiting strategies and stuff. So it's that marriage between the folks that are boots on the ground, if you will, and then the folks that are actually doing the mission support that's really starting to work well. The reverse of that is that what the HR specialists are able to do then is with our technical expertise is help them understand the actual hiring process, like to show them all the different steps that are involved, to show them the breakdown, to help them understand that when a cert, which is a list of people that are available to be hired, when it sits on a manager's desk for up to 30 days because of calendars, that a simple thing like blocking your calendar in advance because you know this list is coming can actually help cut down the time it takes to hire. And even simple things, well, it's not so simple, but veterans' preference. You know, how is that really applied? And when is it applied? And how do I make the best of this? And how do we come up with strategies that actually attract the military members? Because there's a lot of talent within the military community. So how do we attract that talent rather than to keep fighting and pushing against things that we see as being a detriment?
And you each touched on this a little bit just now, but what else have you learned about the hiring process as you've sort of started to go down this path of really focusing in on hiring these cyber professionals? What have you learned about maybe what's working or you know, what could be improved?
The biggest thing that we've learned is the issue that I really just touched on, which is it takes a partnership. So you cannot just take and say, hey, I need a quote-unquote cyber professional and throw it over the fence to an HR specialist and expect them to figure out what you meant by that. Because it could be anything from computer forensics to data coding to actually just needing somebody who understands the federal regulations on acquisition and how does the FAR actually impact what we're trying to do to hire or to get a cyber contract, for example. And so I think the biggest lesson that we've learned is that having a partnership together is probably where we make the most inroads. The second thing I would say is that we can clean up much of the front end, if you will, of hiring, meaning the part that's within the HR office, because we control that. But we have to figure out also that whole long tail that actually goes with the hiring process to include the level of security clearances or the actual background investigation process. And so those are areas that we're tackling together versus seeing them as individual pockets of effort. We're instead coming together and collaborating and figuring out the best ways to attack the problem as a holistic issue.
I can't agree more, and the point's great about we speak two different languages, mm-hmm. between, I guess, traditional HR and cyber.
Right.
So I think our cyber geeks speak Klingon, and we enjoy our Klingon. Mm-hmm. But as we want to attract more people into the field, we also want to make sure we are looking at how do you build a career? If you want to do a tour of duty in government and then maybe later do a tour of duty in private sector, how do we create these things? And one of the biggest things I've learned, being fairly new to government, mm-hmm. is that when you reach out to folks in the Human Capital Office in this department, they understand and they're helping us to create, not just get people on board, but get them on board in a way where we can really use their talent, where they enjoy their job. This is not yesterday's government. Mm-hmm. Where they're part of a team and an entire department that looks at all the things it does as a unity of Homeland Security, and how they can really take those skills and bring them not just to another step of their career in some years, but also to other students, other people they talk to. It's a force multiplier. If I have happy people on my team, they will go out and tell other happy people about what they're doing here, and they'll begin to engage as they are now. This breeds other great people to be attracted to us. We have some phenomenal programs. One is the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education. Of course, it's an acronym, but we call it NICE. And an internally focused cyber workforce initiative, which looks at who are we bringing on to support our own department. I'm working a lot with our public and private sector partners on those, and really looking at how we, again, build a better cyber workforce within and a cyber workforce that can then go out and attract others just like them. We need an elite team. We have an adversary that has plenty of money and no laws. And the diversity that we bring gives a diversity of perspectives. And so I like to look for a team that can really counter and get ahead of any cyber adversary. And the way you do that is to really let them unleash their passion and love working here.
Do you find that this approach that you're both talking about, do you find that you're able to cut down some of the time that it does take to bring someone on board? You know, we always hear the story about, you know, you find a good candidate and the process takes too long and they get another offer from the private sector and then they're gone. Are you finding ways to address that issue?
Yes, absolutely. This is actually making use of everything that's already currently available to us. So sometimes we get into this rut where we think we have to keep running to Congress and asking for yet another hiring authority or yet another something, right? And what we really are doing is stepping back and saying, you know, we have actually at our fingertips a whole host of things that we can actually use and do. How about if we actually implement those and make really good use of those? So one of the things that we're doing, for example, is we're actually going to have a hiring event at the later part of July, in which we're partnering with MPPD, we're partnering with the entire CIO community. So every component within DHS is actually coming together. We're putting those announcements out in advance, which we've already done. We've received over 4,000 applications already for many of the positions that we have available. We're going to use the hiring managers then to actually get involved in this now and determine who it is that they want to interview. We'll send folks an actual invitation to come in, and on the day in July when we do this, we're going to actually have the hiring managers there, interview them on the spot, make tentative job offers on the spot, and then have security there with us so that they can begin the process of filling out their background investigation and their fingerprinting and everything else. Because one of the things that we discovered is, kind of to your point, is that there's this long gap. And if there's a long gap, people lose interest or they go to other jobs. So if we tighten that up, in which we're talking about a one-day process, which this has always been able to be done, we just, you know, we have to actually start just really thinking differently about how do we use what's available. And to add to that, then some of the things that we're doing is making better use of student loan repayments, because as you know, many of the students that we're trying to attract and things have anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 student loans. And so one of the things that we want to do is really reinvigorate our student loan repayment program. We have the ability to do both group and individual retention incentives for our folks, depending on the kinds of certifications that they bring to the table, or if we believe that they might actually be interested in leaving. And we also have the ability to do recruitment bonuses. So all of this takes money, so it's not a free-for-all. It's not, we don't have a blank check from anybody, but we just have to be really smart about where do we apply those different incentives and how do we make the best use of those so that we can actually attract and then retain the talent that we want.
I'd only add, we don't compete with private sector. It's more, it's a different experience, and I say this from having done both now. Mm-hmm. You will see things at the Department of Homeland Security and the government and cybersecurity that you'll never get to see in the private sector. It'll give you a sense of experience, you'll learn it, and you can take that throughout your career other places or bring it back to government. But instead of competing with private sector, we have programs such as a loaned executive program where we bring in executives from the private sector and they can help impart knowledge here and also work with our teams and get some of that experience as well. We're also looking at how you do that, as I alluded to earlier, a little bit back and forth. The skills that we need, as you can imagine, cyber incident response and risk and strategic analysis, vulnerability detection, hunt teams, intelligence, forensics, network engineers, these are things the private sector wants and needs also. These skill sets are better when they've done both, and we're really looking at how we expedite it and make awesome careers for folks that are able to go and do both and make that better for them.
You're absolutely right. Like I always say, this is not your grandfather's government, right? And yeah. So this idea of in and out, we're not looking for 30-year career employees. We're actually looking for employees that want, or folks that want to come in and they want to get this excellent experience, and then they take it to the private sector, and then they come back again. So we really want to create what I'll call a passport, where you can come in and out of government in a much more fluid, easy way. That's one of the things that we would like to really explore under this new cyber statutory authority. So think about things like, for example, total rewards programs, where what I mean by that is instead of defined benefit packages, maybe we meet the people where they are and we negotiate packages, if you will, that are based on projects that we want them to do, benefit packages that are based on projects we want them to do, versus thinking of it as the traditional GS schedule. And so those are just some of the ideas and the collaboration that we have going on that I think will actually pave the way for additional reform efforts throughout the government.
Yeah, Angela, can you expand on that a little bit? I heard you speak about this point before, just looking at the non-traditional ways that you could frame the benefits and incentives that you can provide to get people to come into the department and, you know, maybe stay for a little while, maybe leave or come back. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're working on with that?
So I'm just thinking out loud about different ways that we can actually really address the 21st century workforce that we're going after. So one of the things that the trap I don't want to get into is to take the new cyber statutory authority that we received and then turn right around and then just basically adapt or adopt things that are already in place that may be good for today, but actually don't help us move into the future. So an example of total rewards would be this concept of you come in and you negotiate the fact that I'm going to work on this 5 or 10 year project. At the end of that, during that, I'd also like to have a 1 year sabbatical in which I can go back and get my PhD in organizational development. I don't need your health benefits because I'm already covered, you know, under a spouse, or I don't need your retirement benefits, but I could really use a child care subsidy because I have young children that I need to make sure that they're taken care of. And so the concept is that it's a menu of benefits and options in which you could negotiate where you are in your life. So a mid-career professional is going to have, will probably want things like sabbatical to go back, or the idea of an industry exchange or loaned executive exchange program. but someone fresh out of college, it may be all about child care subsidy and student loan repayment, because that's the first thing on their mind, and having health benefits, you know, for themselves and for their family. So that's just one idea that we're starting to think about and explore. The second one is this idea of passport, whereas as you come in and you gain this excellent experience, it would be wonderful that when you then leave and go to the private sector and gain even more experience, that when you're ready to come back, we're not tying you to the GS schedule and say, well, you know, you didn't have your 1 year time in grade, and so I'm so sorry, you're going to have to start all over again. That's insane. All right, it's just not the way the world works. And so we really actually are going to tackle that particular issue to make sure that, again, it's very fluid. You can come in and out, and it has nothing to do with the grade that you left at.
Can I ask how? Because I know that this all sounds pretty complicated. You're talking about, you know, changing the way the GS levels work and how you move up in the promotion schedule and everything. Do you have an idea of how that could work and if it's possible? I know you said you're in the beginning idea stages here, but can you expand on that a little bit?
I think anything's possible. All we really need to do is we need to sit down and figure out, is it going to take a regulation? Is it going to take a policy? Is it going to take a change in the statute? You know, because some things are driven by the laws or the statute versus something that could I myself just sign off on, right? Because I have the authority to do that. So one of the first things is what's the big and bold ideas that we have? And then matrix it out to say, okay, what is something that we can easily do that has really high impact? Because this whole idea of just low-hanging fruit is not necessarily what we're going after. You can have a quick win, but if it's meaningless and it's not really going to move the needle on what we really need for the kind of talent that we need, then it just really doesn't make much sense to us. So the how part of this is the tricky part. I'm not here to at all make you believe that, oh, we have this all completely figured out. But we've done a lot. When I was at OPM, we interestingly did a lot of work down in the lab, our innovation lab, and mapped out all of this about 3 to 4 years ago. And another interesting thing is that we actually chose cybersecurity as the profession in which to do it. And so as we mapped it all out, we thought about things like maybe you don't have standard quals anymore, but you have like the badging concept, which some of the universities have actually started to adopt and stuff. Maybe you have councils that actually determine, much like how we're going to do our group retention incentives and stuff, where the cyber councils actually are more involved in determining what are the qualifications that you need versus just using a standard OPM qualification standard. Because the community itself knows what it needs versus relying on another independent third party. So it's a ton of moving pieces and parts. We're going to have to figure out what do we do in the short term, midterm, and long term, because this stuff is not going to be done overnight. So it's not going to be for the faint of heart. We're going to have to actually manage a lot of people's expectations as to how quickly you can take basically this aircraft carrier, right, in the middle of downtown DC and move it. But I think the wake of goodness that we'll leave behind will be significant if we get this right.
Phyllis, anything you want to add to that point at all?
We're very excited this is happening. If you're a student coming out of school right now, or a student even still in school looking at what kinds of opportunities you want, some of the disadvantages to working in government go away with some of this. And you can also look at a whole new kind of career where you get the opportunity to be, for example, do some time in the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center, our 24/7 cyber operations center, where you see the good and the bad in cyber all over the planet. You can be part of an incident response team. You can go to an agency or a company and help respond to an intrusion or advise the team. You can go out and work with the different states or work with the infrastructure protection teams and look at how do you maintain the electric grid. You can see all kinds of information that give you an awareness of your world and events that go on in the world that most people never see. And then you can go back and take that information and market a product in the private sector or start a company or teach. And then using what Ms. Bailey's talking about, come in and out of government and apply those new skills. And if I were just coming out of school right now, I'd be looking at that. Whereas I think many years ago, these opportunities weren't available. We're really lucky, and it's a really exciting time to be at DHS.
And to that point a little bit, how are you marketing the DHS mission to your potential job candidates? I've heard many people in government say that, you know, the government mission, the private sector can't beat it. So how are you marketing that mission to people that you want to bring in?
any chance someone will listen to me, including now?
I would say that's what you're doing right now.
This is what we talk about, because I can say it truthfully from my own experience. I can say it. I see the faces on the team. Even in a bad incident, there is an adrenaline rush when you can actually find the bad guy, when you can help another agency, when you can help another company, when you're in partnership with the Secret Service or Homeland Security Investigations or our friends at the FBI or the IC, the intelligence community, working and putting those bits of indicator information together. There's a big reward that comes with being, especially I think, part of the Department of Homeland Security and building trust. It's a very hard time, I can tell you this as a former corporate executive, to tell anyone in the world as part of a global company that you're going to share information with the U.S. government, because those big companies do sales and marketing at enormous proportion overseas, obviously. We are building the trust here that helps collect all the right information, which the bad guy does not want us to put together and create a big picture that they can't fight, without the private information, and working very closely with privacy and civil liberties and all of our scientists to make sure we can create a big picture of data without cutting across any of the privacy and civil liberties. And that's new. And that takes scientists across, again, from data mining, from computing, from networking. We need the folks that understand not only the physics of how to keep the grid alive, how energy is distributed and generated, and how circuits open and close. We also need the cyber ninjas that understand those systems, that keep those physical systems running. And on top of that, we need people that know how to communicate that message in plain language and not Klingon to the general public, so they can understand and get a sense of confidence in what we do. And to work with our legal professionals and our privacy professionals to really make sure that what we're doing is preserving those very rights that we want to keep the adversary from harming. And this is a really exciting time to be looking at a challenging problem. And again, we need the best minds on board, and we're on our way to building an elite team. The speed and the streamlining that our Office of Human Capital is building is incredible. This is something new. It's something I don't think anyone believes that government can do. And I think in 5 years, we'll look back and say this was a very defining moment in the cyber workforce.
So recently, we finished up a special project looking at younger federal employees in government. And I spoke with one younger person who basically said that she was leaving her agency. She wanted to go back to school. She was a term appointment. They wouldn't convert her to permanent. And she left, and she's going to go do something else, and in the hopes that they will be able to help her pay to go to school. So what would you say to people like that? People maybe that you have either at your agency or who are looking to maybe join your agency one day, what would you tell them?
I think the biggest message is that in some cases, it's okay that they're going to leave us, and that, I mean, not necessarily what you just described, right? But because I do understand that that would be frustrating. But in general, I think the message that we're really trying to send is that it is okay to have this in and out of government career, that we are really okay with the fact that in some ways you become an ambassador for us, that if we at least create the best experience that we can, that you gain the most knowledge that you can from this, and that you then take it to your private sector career, I don't know that there's any harm in that. I even often hear this about agencies themselves. You know, people think that if you leave a certain agency that you're disloyal, or, you know, won't you stay with them forever? And it's like, but I've never looked at it that way. Maybe it's because I grew up in the Department of Defense where, you know, you really truly did move around like every 3 years, but it's this idea of take the knowledge and what you've learned, and then go on to the next job. I will tell you, like, just leaving OPM after 8 years, I don't know that I would be a good Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS if I didn't have the experience of OPM. Because this ability to understand how to take a statute that you've been given and turn it into a regulation and then turn it into a policy and then make it operational, there's no better learning ground for that than at the Office of Personnel Management, just as one example. So I really think that rather than see these things as being a disloyalty kind of thing, is like we have to instead see it as, no, we're turning loose, I think, maybe folks that at least understand cyber, understand how the government works, and then in their private careers, they can at least explain that. Maybe they're on a corporate board, and they can begin to say, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but let me tell you how actually a law actually does get passed, you know? And so kind of like Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like you learn something and then you share it with someone else.
when you have someone trained in this very intense but fun environment, and they go to the private sector, they'll be able to advise on how to build the products that we will end up purchasing someday. So I'm very big on buy versus build, and I'd love to see the talent that learned at DHS to go out to the private sector and go to one of these many places all over the country that are these pockets of innovation and work on that very fast-paced and fun and very innovative time schedule and come back with the widgets that we need in government. And that will help create an ecosystem where the products are developed in the environments where you can be agile and you can be innovative, but they'll be developed with the mission requirements that we actually have no way of conveying in many cases because of the way they were learned. It's through gut and through experience. But those brains are going to then go build those products, and we're going to buy them. And I think you're going to see our cyber ecosystem strengthen from this.
To build on that, I can give you two examples. I had, when I was at OPM, two interns that worked for me. One left after both were converted, but one left a little bit later because she wanted to be a flight attendant. And so you might say, well, gosh, you know, she's given up this great government job with great benefits to be a flight attendant. But I can't help but believe that today everything she learned about event planning and how to run a pathways program, she actually helped run the PMF program, that she couldn't take those skill sets, I think, to the private sector. The other one, I'm pretty sure he works for Google right now, and it's the same thing. I can't help but imagine that what he learned from us, too often what I hear, and it really is kind of a little disconcerting for me, is I often will hear, what could corporate America possibly learn from the government? And, you know, I hear that a lot. And I got to tell you, given the experiences and the things that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, there's a whole lot that corporate America could actually learn, just even how to deal with a crisis, right? How to manage your way through an extensive crisis and come out on the other side and not have imploded as a team, as an agency, or anything else, is a pretty valuable lesson all by itself.
Phyllis, I believe you mentioned the unity of effort. So can both of you speak about how that factors into the work that you do and how you approach your job here to recruit and retain new people?
So I think what we've done with unity of effort is we've made it a practical reality. So we've brought the words to life. And one example is the one that I gave you with regard to how every component has pulled together to create this cyber hiring event that we're going to do in the July timeframe. First time ever that every single component has pulled together with regard to this. We have HR office, CBP, our Customs Border and Protection, is actually handling one of the job announcements on behalf of the entire DHS. And I think before, what you would have seen is component by component, everybody would have gone out and tried to do their hiring. But instead, first time ever, we've put out DHS-wide job announcements so that the applicants can actually go in and choose the component that they'd like to work for, the location that they'd like to work for. So to me, unity of effort's just, it's not just words on a piece of paper, it's like unifying our effort, like literally, and then having great success with that.
Taking all those different components that make DHS so special and unique in the Homeland Security mission and saying, there's cyber in everything. Whether it's the Transportation Security Administration or FEMA or our law enforcement components, Homeland Security Investigations, which is part of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or the U.S. Secret Service, some of the finest investigators on the planet for financial crime. So when you look at how we pull all that cyber together, it's how do we not only utilize those skill sets in our mission, you know, when do you partner up with the law enforcement side, or how do you learn about the maritime threats and cyber from Coast Guard? It's a fascinating experience. But also when you talk to people outside, you're not just coming into NPPD or the Cyber Ops Center, you're joining the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. The Secretary always tells us cybersecurity is a part of Homeland Security. So you're joining a much bigger mission, and you're learning an entire breadth of where cyber not only enables that mission, but it pushes it forward. And the best example I can give you is in part of what we look at in protecting, I'll call them our customers, right, the federal civilian networks and our private sector customers. We test a lot of our programs, and we learn from our Office of the CIO and the Chief Information Security Officer that focus on the protection of DHS's network. DHS.gov, to me, is the world's largest petri dish. It's such a target. Who is trying to get into this department? And so we can learn from their experience, not only and help make our own programs sharper, but look at the threats that might be coming to other federal agencies or across the civilian government. That's one example, but we work very well together. I think the leadership has done a lot, the Secretary, the Deputy, and Undersecretary Spaulding and others, to make sure that, again, we not only look at when we hire, making sure we make the bigger picture. You're coming into an entire department that looks holistically at cybersecurity, because that's how you have to protect the world against cyber, is to look at it in the big picture. But also you're looking at a department that has components that each have cybersecurity, and that makes us a lot sharper as we work together.